The champ that runs the camp. The camp. The champ that runs the camp. The champ that runs the camp. Maybe he was better off before he won the title, but oh my god, everybody, we are back with another episode of Noisebleed. I am excited. We're going to talk about Backlash, the Cruiserweight Classic. We have two TNA stars that are now champions in the WWE. We have SmackDown, which was really good. We have Raw, which I guess had its moments. I can hardly remember most of them, but there were some of them. But this was a huge week for professional wrestling. Every now and then, wrestling fans start to lose hope. That's why there's so many that abandon the product for so long. But weeks like this are what I need. Every now and then, I need to be reminded why I like this. Wrestling disappoints me so much. Any wrestling fan that doesn't get disappointed constantly, I don't know who you are, because I don't think you exist. I think you're a figment of my imagination. You are an idealistic projection of what I want to be, really. Just a fan that's not disappointed by wrestling, somebody who can just blindly enjoy it. I personally can't. There's actually this really good sketch that sums up being a fan of wrestling. I think it was by College Humor. I'm not completely sure about that. I'm pretty sure if you look up College Humor wrestling, you'll probably be able to find it. They have these two guys going back and forth, and they're both complaining about wrestling. And then towards the end, the guy asks him, "Wait, do you like wrestling?" And he's like, "Of course I like wrestling. That's why I hate it." And it pretty much perfectly described how wrestling fans are. We are total masochists. We live to be disappointed. We live to complain. And then when these great moments happen, when these great magnificent moments like AJ Styles winning the World Heavyweight Championship or TJ Perkins, who I did not expect to win the CWC, pulling it out and becoming the first cruiserweight champion since friggin' Hornswoggle, how many years ago? 7, 6, 8? I don't even know. It feels like it's been forever. And just the rebirth of the cruiserweight division is one of the biggest moments for me. That's what I enjoyed about wrestling. When I first started watching pre-2006, where I really got hooked, one of the things that I tuned in for the most were the cruiserweights. That's why I was a SmackDown kid, because they had the cruiserweights as kind of an answer to the women's division on Raw, which was killing it at times. At times, it was also very disappointing. I don't know. I was there towards the end of the Lita and Trish Stratus thing, but besides them, not a lot was going on as far as the women. They were kind of transferring from the women's wrestler to the divas, which that was an interesting time. And sadly, these things that I really loved that got me into professional wrestling started to go downhill as I was just starting to order the pay-per-views and everything. Back in 2006, I started ordering the pay-per-views, and then it felt like no time before the cruiserweight division was dead. The women were all divas. There was something wrong. I didn't really understand why the women's division wasn't exciting anymore. I didn't understand how complex it was to put together a really good match, but I could realize when one was better than another, and Lita and Trish Stratus were kind of a last of their kind. There was Mickie James, she was pretty good as well, but after a while it just seemed like the women's division lost all of its stars, and I was looking at it like nobody was really like them. I didn't see it as they were becoming divas. I saw it as Trish, Lita, Mickie, people like that. They were just unique. They were just better than everybody else. I didn't see it as them not really putting as much effort into getting athletes, them going for looks before anything, and then worrying about training them and making them competent wrestlers later. I didn't understand how fucked up it was in that sense, but I knew that it was not going to be the same. And I was kind of wrong to a certain degree, because now it's something completely different. It was never quite like it is today. The women's division is a whole new creature, and I guess this is a pretty good way to segue into the beginning of Backlash. One of the best things about this is that they were confident enough to let the women open the show, and they gave them a decent amount of time. I think they gave them about 15 minutes, maybe more. I'm not sure off the top of my head. I could check, but it's not really worth it at this point. They got the amount of time that they needed to put on a decent show. Alexa Bliss is doing a Harley Quinn gimmick, and I guess that's okay if it's just the look. I wish they didn't acknowledge any sort of Harley Quinn type character traits or anything like that. It seems like when Mauro's like, she's the Harley Quinn of WWE, she's not really the Harley Quinn. It's not her personality. She's kind of a stuck up bitch. Harley Quinn was very loose, crazy, psychotic, obsessive clown bitch. So I guess they both have the bitch thing in common, but that's pretty much where it ends. I mean, you can draw some more conclusions if you really want to, but at this point, I don't think these sorts of looks, I think these looks can take away from the character to a certain degree, though they are kind of cool to see maybe once or twice. Either way, Alexa Bliss shined out there. She was one of the most interesting acts in the ring while she was in there. Even though she was the first one eliminated, she really legitimized herself as a singles competitor. I think she's going to have a great future. Many women's championship reigns, I hope, because I really do think she's good enough to be the women's champion. Maybe not just yet. It's a little bit early for Becky to lose the belt, but eventually I do want Alexa Bliss to hold that championship. She's just really good. The best thing about Alexa Bliss, she works for everybody. She works for the WWE, who really like that diva look, and they can market her like that if they really want to. But overall, she's a fucking wrestler, and I can respect that so much. The Smarks can get behind that. Everybody can get behind that as a top female heel, and I hope that's the direction she's going for. Who knows? I have a feeling Nikki Bella could also take that role, but I really like Alexa Bliss. I think I to a certain degree like Nikki Bella. I think she's gotten better. She was pretty bad at one point, but now she is a competent wrestler. She was forced to keep up with people like Charlotte, and I think stuff like that made her a lot better. And I think she's going to be doing some of the better work of her career going forward when it comes to legitimizing the SmackDown Women's Division. I'm sure she'll play a decent role in that. So Alexa Bliss was eliminated by Naomi and Natalya. I believe it was like a Tower of Doom. It was an Over the Castle powerbomb type thing. Naomi did the little flip thing to take her down while Natalya was about to powerbomb her, which was really cool. It was a great way to finish. And you know what? I don't think it makes Alexa Bliss look bad at all when you're finished by something like that. There's no shame in being down for the three count, because it took two people breaking out a very devastating move to do so. Naomi, however, she was kind of eliminated very anticlimactically with the sharpshooter. I don't know, it didn't seem like there was much setup to it. Nikki ends up beating Natalya with this torture rack spin-out powerbomb thing. I don't even know what the move was supposed to be, but it was kind of interesting. It landed kind of funny, but I do think it's a cool move if she can do it smoothly. Carmella rolls up Nikki. Nikki slaps Carmella, and Becky Lynch beats Carmella with the disarmer, and there's no better way to do this. Becky gives a short speech. She has this sort of thing to her where she's really dorky and cheesy, but it kind of works because it feels super genuine, not like she's trying to be cool and failing. It's more like this is just her speaking from the heart, which I can kind of respect. And she's going to legitimize this belt because she is overall the most legitimate star on the roster. I really do think Becky Lynch is going to legitimize the hell out of that belt. It's going to be a bit of a challenge because she spent the end of the pre-brand split getting her ass kicked a little bit by the current top stars on Raw, which is kind of a shame. I really do enjoy Becky Lynch, and I think she should have been booked a little bit stronger than she was, especially if they foresaw the brand split. And they should have made her look a little bit better if they were going to make her the champion. But how far can you really plan ahead? You really can't. Alright, so what else do we got? We got Miz talking to some Nickelodeon kid. I don't know anything about this, so I'm not even going to bother talking about it. We have Bray Wyatt jumping Randy Orton, which results in a win over Randy Orton for Bray. It doesn't make Bray look good. It doesn't make Orton look bad. It's just whatever. And we end up getting Kane versus Bray Wyatt, which I guess for a fill-in match, it was okay. We had a ring bell smash thing, like Bray hitting Kane with the ring bell. That was kind of fun. We don't see the ring bell get used that often. We also get Bray doing a senton through the announce table. But Kane ends up winning after an Orton interference. And if Orton wasn't cleared to compete, because that's why they had to do this, because he wasn't cleared to compete, why is he allowed to go out there and do an RKO? What are they allowed to do when they're not cleared to compete? It seems like there's this really weird gray area where they can kind of do stuff, but they just have to make it look like they're not competing. These little gray areas are always so weird. Like, you have somebody injured in real life, not kayfabe, real life, like Randy Orton. What if you put him in a match like, let's say, kind of like Bray Wyatt versus, not Bray Wyatt, Eric Rowan versus The Rock at WrestleMania this year, where he just got finished in the first move. What if Randy Orton did the exact same thing, but he was announced as being part of the match, they rang the bell, they recorded the victory, would they still be able to get away with that? I feel like maybe they would, but I don't know where they really draw the line. That's kind of the weird thing about this whole situation. Whatever. We have so much material to cover that I don't even want to get stuck on it at this point. I could talk about weird little technicalities for days. Let's talk about The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler, though. First of all, match of the night. I mean, Dean and AJ was okay, but I feel like Dean can... He's had better matches, and AJ has had better matches. They're both capable of better. I don't know what was missing here. There was something wrong with this one. It just... Something about Dean Ambrose right now seems to be lacking entirely. And I think a lot of people have been complaining about this, and they've even acknowledged it on SmackDown, where they have John Cena come out and say, "You're resting on your laurels. Stone Cold was right." And that's really, really interesting that they're making this a part of things. I don't know. I doubt that that was their intention. I'm sure they wanted that match to kill, but it just didn't come out as well as they would have liked. At least that's what I assume. If this was all their intention, they're thinking way further ahead than I would ever give them credit for. But we're skipping ahead a little bit too much. Miz v. Dolph Ziggler. Miz wrestles his ass off. He does this awesome Romero surfboard thingy. Not exactly sure the terminology for the word, because they have like that Romero stretch thing move, and it's also kind of like a surfboard, and that thing was perfect. There was great use of the figure four, which Miz has been using for a while, but I think lately his use of it has been very smart. It's not just the use of the move, but it's the way he uses it, and having somebody like Ziggler sell his ass off is great. Miz mocks Daniel Bryan at some point in the match. He starts doing the yes chant thing, and he does it nice and slow, which is perfect. And Maurice fucking maces Dolph Ziggler, and Miz ends up getting the win. Still looking fairly strong because it was a good match. And then we have this weird segment on SmackDown, as long as we're talking about related stuff. We have this weird segment on SmackDown where Dolph wants his match. He wants his rematch. Miz is like, nah. Daniel Bryan is like, yeah. But Miz's justification was actually really good, where Miz is all like, he didn't even earn his first shot. What makes you think he deserves a rematch? And you know what? It's great when a heel can believe their bullshit, because I'm buying into that. I'm pretty much calling myself a heel by saying that, but I can get his perspective on that, and I can see how somebody would believe what he believes, and I think that's good. I think it's great when a heel's motivation is far more believable. The Miz might actually become a face soon. That's kind of a weird thing about it. I don't know if they should do that, but they might. Oh well, let's talk about The Miz later. There's so much to say about him, though. You know what? Let's talk about The Miz a little bit more, actually. Let's talk about his performance on SmackDown. He walks out after that segment. That was great. He's like, I'm not going to deal with your bullshit. I'm taking your Intercontinental Championship with me, Mr. SmackDown General Manager, and go fuck yourself very much. And I think that was a great way of doing it. It would have been better if he actually told him to go fuck himself, but you know, you can only get away with so much. I think it was really cool. And then how he showed up at the end of the night to beat up that jobber, the necklace jobber, the guy who jobbed to Braun Strowman. Oh God, what was that guy's name? I actually looked him up earlier today and I ended up finding, I'm trying to think of what it was. James Ellsworth. That's what it was, right? James Ellsworth. I'm actually going to Google this right now because I know he is someone. Okay, James Ellsworth is like a historical figure. I want to type in James Ellsworth, WWE. And this guy, from what I remember, he's actually a somewhat successful indie wrestler. Like, he's like Jimmy Dream or something. I believe that's what it was. He's apparently fairly talented. I haven't seen any of his work outside of being squashed by Braun Strowman, but I think that's really cool. And the fact that he's appeared twice, I would love it if they turned him into an actual character. Remember the guy? Remember Colin Delaney? You probably don't. I want him to be the next Colin Delaney. Look up Colin Delaney if you don't remember him. And it's just gold. Absolute gold. So what else do we got? We got the tag matches with the Usos. They wore black, which I was very excited about. Except I was kind of disappointed when they weren't wearing black on SmackDown. They showed up on SmackDown and they were wearing red and white. I kind of liked it when you were wearing black and white. You should probably make that a little bit more consistent. They went with this, like, half crab kind of lion tamer-ish thing. I don't even know what it was. They win over the Hype Bros with that. And then the Usos get beat by Heath Slater and Rhino while they're playing actually really good heels. I can't stand the Usos, but now that they're heels, I was actually being like, you know, I am now the Usos' biggest fan during that match. Like, I really do think they're capable. But then they start talking, and it bothers the crap out of me. And then there was this one moment towards the end where one of the Usos was on the ground and about to take a move, and I saw him fix his shirt. That pissed me off so bad. Couldn't you resist pulling your shirt down over your belly? Ugh. You're supposed to be dead. Dead people don't fix their shirts. That's not how it works. Calming myself down just a little bit. I got a little bit worked up over him fixing his shirt. Okay, for the main event, we have Dean Ambrose versus AJ Styles. AJ teases an apron Styles clash, and that's the type of thing I never want to see. I don't want to see moves like that. We know that the Styles clash is dangerous. We are fully aware of that. We don't need it being taken off of the apron. I know that Dean can take a decent amount of damage, but moves like that they're just dangerous. And maybe I'm getting soft as I age and understand how much these people feel it afterwards, how much they feel the pain afterwards, but it's just bad. It's just really bad. But we do have this really good slingshot spot, which I also cringed at, where AJ is slingshotted into the post, and that was a big, that was a big, oh, what, is he okay? Because he sold it like death. Dolph Ziggler took a really good slingshot earlier in the night as well. Slingshots just worked out at Backlash this year. I don't know. That's the move of the night. It's a simple move, but it worked out. AJ does his springboard for 450 splash. And, that's pretty much all I have to say for highlights from that match. Then AJ wins with the Styles clash after hitting Dean with the low blow, which, yeah, I guess that's okay. It's not terrible. It's whatever. And then I think the night, not the night after, 2 nights later, when we actually have SmackDown, it was very interesting because AJ opens the show and Dean's all pissed that he got kicked in the balls, and John Cena's back and Cena's saying that Ambrose ain't got no balls, and friggin', oh my god. And Dean is all like, you're a part-timer, so go fuck yourself, sir. That's great. Like, everything was working out. I don't know why everything just came together so well. And I would have to say that Backlash, solid pay-per-view, one of the better ones this year when you talk about top to bottom, just good matches. The thing about this is that there were no bad matches, really. You could say that Kane versus Bray Wyatt was bad, and I'll entertain that idea, but I still think they did pretty well, especially considering that they were just filling in. I think that was actually a decent job. But every match, excluding Baron Corbin versus Apollo Crews, which was on the pre-show, which was 9 minutes and 55 seconds, every match, also excluding the Bray Wyatt Randy Orton match, because that counts. Actually, it's weird because I just got on the Wikipedia page. It says Bray Wyatt defeated Randy Orton by forfeit, but it says that the match was 24 seconds long. It was by countout. It wasn't by forfeit. That's not how it works. The match would not be it would be an instantaneous win. The match would have been 0 seconds and 0 minutes. It would have been zero everything if it was by forfeit. So, I don't know, Wikipedia, just, anybody can edit it, so whatever. But all of the other matches were above 10 minutes. And that was the right decision. It gave everybody enough time to get their shit in and tell a decent story. It seems like a lot of times there are some matches that get the shaft, but with so few matches on the show, they were able to give every single match its importance, its time, everybody got their shit in, and it was just a solid show. I would like it if the high points felt a little bit higher, you know, if the main event felt a little bit more prestigious, but overall, I would say it was a solid show. I can't say that the Raw afterwards was all that great. This was SmackDown's week to shine, and this is going to be a really weird thing because I'm so used to after the pay-per-views having the next show being the fallout. But when it's a SmackDown pay-per-view, I have to wait an extra day, which gives me time to let everything simmer down. So if there's a lot of tension, then it's going to build more. But if I'm just waiting for something, if I'm excited about something, then it gives it a little time to die down. So I guess there are some advantages and disadvantages when it comes to that. I think Raw really does have the better deal in that case. Let's talk a little bit about Raw. So we have Roman Reigns, who was pretty much screwed out of his opportunity to be in the main event for Clash of the Champions, or Clash of Champions, whatever they want to call it these days, because they call it whatever they seem to want at the time. He's screwed out of it by Rusev, so we have some more Rusev and Roman, and I think that's fine. And we have Seth and Owens, and it still doesn't seem like Seth is, I don't know, Seth has this weird thing with Mick Foley that honestly I don't even care to talk about right now, but they got their weird little back and forth going on. Foley seems to want to help Seth, but Seth is not making it easy on him. Come on, Seth, help me help you. One of those types of situations. You got what you want. Just wait for Clash of the Champions. We have Bo Dallas on the show, and that's fine. We have Jack Swagger's last night when he loses to Jinder Mahal, only to show up on SmackDown this week and cut a really weird promo. The Rolling Stones. What is that? What does that even mean? Who are the, are the Rolling Stones actually here tonight? I don't understand. I don't get it. Where were they? Does it have something to do with where they happened to be that night? I don't know where they were, but it was just really weird. Jack Swagger's, he just seems like a weird guy. I don't know. But if he belongs anywhere, he belongs on SmackDown. If SmackDown can make a star out of somebody like Heath Slater, then they can make a star out of Jack Swagger. A former heavyweight champion can be made into a heavyweight champion again if they really try. Even though he's one of the cringier people, with the right booking, I believe in the SmackDown writers. On Raw, I don't think he would go anywhere. It seems like Raw is like... I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It's kind of like a class system. Raw kind of has it rigged in favor of its top stars. And SmackDown is very socialist. They give everybody kind of... or even communist, whatever the fuck you want to call it. They give everybody kind of an equal shake. But at the same time, then if we're talking about classes, then SmackDown seems to have more room to go up and down in classes, which you'd think that's kind of... I don't know. It's hard to compare things that don't belong being compared. What am I doing? I'm about to start a debate, if anybody even listens to this thing, which they will not, so I better not fool myself. We have the Shining Stars and Enzo and Cass. They have a thing going on. And I'm okay with that. I think they are all very funny together. And I think the Shining Stars have a lot of potential. And I think working with Enzo and Cass is going to really put them over to a certain degree as decent heels. And they're selling timeshares to friggin' R-Truth. And I think that's wonderful. What's R-Truth doing? I don't know. I haven't seen much about the Golden Truth. Were they there that night? I don't know. I feel like I skipped over their match if they had it. They were probably on, like, Main Event or Superstars or whichever one Raw happens to have. Haven't watched either of those since the brand split, so I haven't figured it out quite yet. So, whatever. I think I'm done talking about Raw. Let's go exclusive SmackDown. Then we'll talk a little bit about the CWC, and we'll move on from there. I guess the last thing we'll talk about in regards to Raw will be the Cruiserweight Classic, since the Cruiserweights are going over there. By extension, we are talking about them. Oh, well. We have James Ellsworth playing a big role on SmackDown, and I actually just read something about Mick Foley kayfabe being upset with Daniel Bryan for using James Ellsworth, because apparently he's property of Raw. I guess he was signed at some point, which I think is cool. I think he has a natural charisma to him, because everybody gave him a pretty huge pop when he came out in the end of the night. And when Miz joined him, joined AJ and beat up the freaking jobber, that was a wonderful moment. It made Miz look like a boss, because earlier in the night, he's like, no, I am the main event. And what did he do? He made himself the main event in that tag team match with AJ, Dean, and Cena. And he seemed like he belonged there. In the end, Cena, of course, ends up getting the win, but he gets the dirty deeds by Ambrose. So, I don't know. We got Shades of Grey going on here. I love it. Anywhere Shades of Grey exist, I think it's exciting. Maybe turning Dean into more of a tweener. He's kind of been playing more of a tweener role anyway, which I think is good. Dean has been getting booed a lot more lately, and people are starting to realize that he's not quite as interesting as we all know he can be. I think Dean just thrives a lot more in that heel role. When he's being booed, it feels so much more natural, and I think if he started looking for those boos, he could find them better than anybody. I really want to see Jon Moxley in a WWE ring. I still think they're capable of doing that. I know you can't do it to the same degree that they were able to do it in, like, FCW and IPW, I believe. It's not going to be the same Jon Moxley, but I think they can book it smarter, and he would be great. I think it would be really wonderful. I hope that's the case. So we have the Usos beating the Hype Bros again, which is a thing. Styles tries to recruit a bunch of people throughout the night, which was really, really funny, because Styles has gone around the past few weeks and he's like, I'm the face that runs the place. I'm better than all of you. So when he goes up to people, he's like, they're like, fuck you. Kane laughs in his face, and Baron Corbin's all like, I don't want to be your partner, man. I want to be your opponent. And that's a thing, I guess. Corbin versus Cruz, interrupted by Jack Swagger, who apparently is there to introduce the Rolling Stones, who were running a little bit late that... No, I'm not funny. I'm not going to try. Becky Lynch has a great moment where she's super giddy. Alexa Bliss wins a five-way dance. They called it a five-pack challenge. It's a five-way dance. I wish they would just call it that every now and then. A three-way dance. I mean, if you don't have something that flows off the tongue, just say that. Or just say a battle royal. It can be a battle royal. It's not an over-the-top rope battle royal, but it's a battle royal. I don't know. I don't know what to even... I guess battle royals are elimination. I don't think they were elimination. I think that was just a single fall. I may have forgotten a lot about what's been going on this week. With so much happening in the world of professional wrestling, I'm missing a lot in my brain right now. So, Heath Slater and Rhino, they take on the Ascension because they're like, we're going to be fighting champions. And Shane McMahon's like, okay, you're going to take them on. Put your titles on the line. Rhino ends up winning it for them. I don't know. Was there anything else? Oh, God, I'm looking at my notes right now and I freaked out when I saw the jobber with no chin. That's what I labeled him as. We have Orton talking. I fast forwarded a little bit. Bray does some stuff. Eric Rowan's back. So Eric Rowan and Bray Wyatt are working together again. Any sort of Wyatt family breakup that was teased doesn't actually seem to hold any sort of water. They don't have to break up the Wyatt family. They don't have to tease a breakup. They can go off and do their own things every now and then, and you can keep the door open for them to work together again. Well, why don't you just do that? You don't have to have a breaking point every single time they go off and do their own thing for a few minutes. And Luke Harper is probably going to come back soon. I was predicting that there would be some Luke Harper shenanigans on Sunday if Randy Orton was able to compete, but he wasn't. So I think the same thing may be pushed off until the next pay-per-view. Luke Harper might come back, some sort of shenanigans, cost Randy the match, maybe continue the feud forward a little bit more. I'm not sure. Bray Wyatt's not going to get the last laugh in any sort of feud because he's Bray Wyatt. He doesn't win. That's just kind of how things are. As far as SmackDown goes, I think that's about it. I think we can, you know, I'm going through all this fairly quick, which is surprising considering how much we have. I thought this would take a lot longer, but I guess we can just talk about the CWC now. I don't really have any notes for this. I didn't really put a lot of thought into this. This is something that I only watched earlier, right before I record this. So it's really fresh in my mind, but at the same time, it was so exciting that it's somewhat of a blur. So we have Zack Sabre Jr. getting eliminated, which I was shocked by. I was even more shocked that Kota Ibushi got eliminated. We have two people. I didn't think Grand Metalik was going to make it past like the second or third round, but he made it all the way to the finals. That's great. I thought Grand Metalik was awesome. The first round, he actually did demask himself, which was really a big no-no for me. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of clumsy. I don't know if they're going to have this guy go all the way. He did go all the way. He didn't win the last round, but he went pretty friggin' far. And that's worth a lot. He went further than Kota Ibushi. He went further than Zack Sabre Jr., the two people who I thought were going to meet in the finals. And then neither of them make it to the finals. Two people who I didn't expect to make it this far are facing each other for the championship. And they introduced the new championship, and I thought it was great. The thing about titles, I like the idea of having a solid color for the plates, and that color being silver or gold. I don't like having all the shades of color. Like, we have the World Heavyweight Championship. It has a bunch of shades of color. It has some red, it has some brown, it has some kind of a dirty gold to it. It's got a lot of shades to it. I like solid gold. If it was the same exact thing, just solid gold, I would like it so much more. The thing that I like about the Cruiserweight Championship, it's a solid silver plate. And I think that's really, really prestigious looking. Whether you like the strap or not, I think the strap is the biggest thing in question. If it was just a black strap, I think the belt would be perfect. I am okay with the purple strap, but I think the black strap would make it seem a little bit more serious. Adding a little bit too much color to the belts these days is kind of becoming a running joke. I think it kind of demeans the look of a colorful strap. colorful straps are supposed to be something special when you would see the Ultimate Warrior have the, I think it was Ultimate Warrior, he would have, I think he had the yellow strap, or was it the white? I don't even know. You have Mr. Perfect, I believe he had the white one. I think Warrior had like blue and yellow at different points. I'm not even entirely sure. It's all kind of fuzzy in my head. I've been talking for over 30 minutes. Either way, I think having too many colorful straps makes a colorful strap seem less special. I think the colorful straps are supposed to catch your eye, but now it's becoming very commonplace. Personally, I enjoy the purple strap, but the problem is that my friend Alex told me it looks like a toy, and I couldn't tell him he was wrong. So, maybe they'll sell a good amount of toy belts if they get anything out of this. I still think it looks really good, though. I think it looked really appropriate on TJ Perkins. I think he's a great first new champion. A lot of people are complaining that this is a terrible way to end Hornswoggle's extremely long cruiserweight title reign by just having the title be vacated after 6 years and placed on some other guy. Or 7 years, or 8 years, I'm not even sure how long it's been. God, my memory is so terrible. Whatever. We have the Cruiserweight division going to Raw. Will this save Monday Night Raw? Because it seems like they just don't have enough to fill their hours. Not enough exciting material. Too many lower card things that just don't seem that special. Not giving the attention up and down the card that they give to their main eventers. Will the Cruiserweights be able to do this? I think it's possible, because Cruiserweights, they kind of go above booking. They kind of make things just work in the ring. Though there are plenty that have been very creative about it. Cruiserweights like Chris Jericho back in his WCW days, Eddie Guerrero, a lot of them who had a lot of character to them were more heavily booked than the average Cruiserweight. I still think this is going to be really good for everybody involved. And there's going to be some people who will find their personality. There are some that will just be there to put on good matches. And I think that's kind of an exciting thing about the Cruiserweight division. Because I'm pretty sure, especially in this day and age, this is going to be a stepping stone to being a Universal Champion. There's a lot of stars that these days in a Cruiserweight division could just use that as a stepping stone to achieve greater success. And I really think people like Kota Ibushi, there are people who are above the Cruiserweight division, but should be in the Cruiserweight division in order to elevate it to the point where they're no longer above it. Having the people in the division elevate the division itself is definitely going to be something that they're going to have to commit to. Maybe use people like Finn Balor when he comes back. I know they want Finn Balor to be in the Universal Champion picture, but I think having somebody like Finn Balor working with the Cruiserweights, holding that belt, making it prestigious, I think it's better for everyone that he stays involved somewhere like there. And I think he would make a great Universal Champion. I just really care about the fate of the Cruiserweight division and its championship. But that's all I've got to say on this week's edition of Noisebleed. I will be back next Friday, and I'm probably going to be able to talk about NXT a little bit more, because I haven't been able to watch as much NXT lately with the CWC. You can only make so much time for wrestling, and you got to prioritize a little bit, so I've been choosing that lately, because I know it's gone. It's gone. It's going away way earlier than NXT will be there. They've got a little bit of time before their next big event, so I'll be able to catch up on everything now. So I'm probably going to go watch some NXT right now. I've got like two or three episodes that I haven't seen. So we'll see what's going on with Hideo Itami. What's going on with Nakamura. Is Joe okay? Is Bobby Roode doing all right? I hope Bobby Roode's doing all right. Where's Eric Young? I don't even know where that guy is. He showed up 1 week and now he's gone. I haven't been reading the dirt sheets when it comes to him, so maybe he's doing something? I am so excited for this. So I will catch you guys next time. I'm doing some great stuff for this podcast, trying to expand upon it, but I'll talk to you a little bit more about that in the future. Remember to check me out on social media. Everything's in the description box below, so I'm not going to waste your time plugging everything individually. But Facebook and Twitter and such. And such. Alright, I'm done. Bye. Bye, everybody. Bye. I'm the champ that runs the camp, man. The freaking champ that runs the camp. Who would have thunk of that?